Hey, hey, hey! This is Ricky Herbst, cinema program director on a hot mic on a cold day here in the state-of-the-art Browning Cinema in the lovely DeBartolo Performing Arts Center on the bucolic campus of University of Notre Dame in South Bend, St. Joe County, Indiana. Thank you for listening. Today I'm joined, as always, by Kevin Krzmanich, who heads up the technology that makes the Browning Cinema run smoothly, which is no small feat if you've ever tried messing with the cable box. He also serves as the sound engineer on these lectures, as well as the Establishing Shot podcast, the official podcast of the Browning Cinema. As always, big thanks to Kevin, and also to Stacey Stikovich, who makes this and all the various recordings from the Browning Cinema available to you online on the DeBartolo Performing Arts website. So the lecture is going to be pretty short this week, and I'll let you be the taste tester on whether it's sweet, but hopefully that as well. We have a visiting filmmaker this week, and I don't want to step too heavily on her toes. Further, the films we'll be discussing are essay films, which I'll describe momentarily, but those aren't really built for explanation prior to viewing. They're made generally for watching and then pondering and discussion, like, say, an essay. So what is an essay film exactly? Well, it's a little tricky to define, given in no small part because the definition of an essay itself is a bit of a floating target. Basically, essays, and in turn, their filmed versions, are opportunities for a personalized viewpoint to be made known. So an essay could be a magazine op-ed piece. It could be 8 to 10 pages in size 12 font with a 1-inch margin or 2-inch margins if you've been procrastinating. Or it could be a film that makes your ideas, your viewpoints, your opinions made known. But it's also confusing, the definition, because when Hans Richter coined the term in the 1940s, he noted that essay films allow the filmmakers to transgress the rules and parameters of the traditional documentary practice, granting the imagination with all its artistic potentially free rein. And that's all well and good, but what is being transgressed? What rules chopped down? It's a definition by subtraction, which is a little tricky for pinning down an assertive definition. And it's also not like filmmakers weren't making essay films prior to Richter's coinage. What we can do in other ways is to look at films people say are essay films and extrapolate. The go-to filmmaker in essay films, or at least the filmmaker discussed most by theorists and critics and academics who talk about these things, is Chris Marker, part of the left bank of the French New Wave. His voiceovers and very literary techniques and direct address and embedded / highlighted theses make his films like Saint-Soleil strong examples of essay films. Another name often cited is Haroun Faruqi, who, as it was described, was, quote, or has, quote, spent a lifetime unpacking images as embodiments of social systems, from prison surveillance videos to business presentations to football broadcasts, that being soccer, and as systems of meanings in themselves. He once described his practice as images commenting on images, an analytic technique that, through its resourcefulness and simplicity, frequently yields eloquence, unquote. That works out nicely, as one of the short films we will be watching is a shot-for-shot remake of a Haroun Faruqi film. The original is Inextinguishable Fire. The remake is What Faruqi Taught by Jill Godmillo, who you might remember for her documentary Film Manifesto early in the semester, and who will be visiting class this week. A little on Godmillo, and then back to set the stage for the other essay films. Jill was born Joan Godmillo and raised in Philly during the Eisenhower 50s. Raised in a Jewish home, she left for a Quaker work camp in high school, got off the bus and declared her name was Jill, not Joan, got some radical politics in her. When it came time to head to college, she was heading to attend Berkeley, but got off instead in Madison, and decided to attend school there at Wisconsin, itself a place where art and politics were consistently commingling in and outside of the classroom. Studying Russian literature, she ultimately began editing film, which is pretty crucial to her approach to film as well as her end products. Working as an editor of a film, or as a film seamstress, essentially, allows you to have a greater awareness of the film's patterns. That is, how they come together, how they fit technically, in order for something two-dimensional, like some fabric, to pop into a pair of pants, or a strip of film to pop into a love story that brings you to tears. And being an editor also allows you to appreciate the art that has been created previously and comes before you, which features prominently in Godmilla's work. Her films like Antonia, A Portrait of a Woman, for which she was nominated for an Oscar, and Nevelson in Process, and Lear, 87 Archive, all document the artistic work of other artists. But in the artist she chose to document, and in her articulation of that work through her filmic choices, Godmilla allows two essay films to occur, that of the artist originally and that of her work, with a third essay film, one could think, occurring between how the two interact and interconnect. And as you can see from Godmilla's piece of how she came to remake Farocchi's film, which is in today's email, a person can see pretty clearly her importance, or the importance she places on the labor one puts into an essay, film, or otherwise. The stitches or ideas often overlooked are crucial to her. The totality of the situation, which allows its rearticulation to be so unique, crucial to her as well. From that discipline and the slight shifts from the original comes something kinetic. As I was mentioning before, it gains energy from the triangle of ideas bouncing off of one another. The original, the rearticulation, how the two come together. A past, a present, and a future tense mix of sorts. But I really want Jill to speak for herself and in concert with us and really work off her writing to inform our discussion, along with the films we'll be watching naturally. As I mentioned, we're watching Godmilla's film What Farocchi Taught. We'll also be watching Semiotics of the Kitchen from 1975 and John Grayson's 14.3 Seconds from 2008. Rosler's film articulates, somewhat through not speaking, how women's labor is commodified and simplified and corrupted so that it can be widely consumed. Wanting to work against the idea that the, quote, familiar system of everyday kitchen meanings, the securely understood sign of domestic industry and food production, unquote. That's Rosler's goal. That's what she's trying to challenge. Further, known for her feminism theory, Rosler famously said that, quote, when the woman speaks, she names her own oppression, unquote, which makes for an interesting compass out of oppression for film, essay films, and specifically this film. How she undoes that impression via her essay film is a great way to see the potential documentary films have. John Grayson, the filmmaker behind 14.3 Seconds, is a Canadian film and video maker known for intellectually sophisticated, iconoclastic, queer activist art. 14.3 Seconds was made after Grayson met a journalist who was in Iraq after the shock and awe bombings. That journalist found himself surveying the damage in Iraq when he, quote, discovered that he was standing on a carpet of twisted celluloid. His translator informed him that the theater that had been bombed was also home to the Iraqi film archives, now reduced to a garbage heap of 35 millimeter film. The sun was setting, curfew was sounding, the translator was anxious. Not sure what he was doing, the journalist filled his pockets with a handful of film scraps. He showed them to Grayson a few weeks later, and they held them up to the light, squinting at the frames. 20 years earlier, Grayson had worked for a film distributor and had become somewhat adept at the now-lost art of sprocket hole repair. His local film co-op still had a Steenbeck, the machine you'd use to edit 35mm, and he spent a few days cleaning, mending, and splicing. The result was 8 clips totaling 14.3 seconds from the entire Iraqi film archive. Using that as the source material, Grayson was able to speak his opinion regarding the American invasion and the extinction of ideas, history, and beauty that war brought on, often unseen by the world because it had literally been vanquished. So those are our three films. They're heavy subjects, sure, but they really are invigorating for seeing the potential, the possibility of documentary film. Also, they sit interestingly against the taxonomy Nichols created and show a way some components of those modes can be mixed to create something truly unique and often useful. Again, thanks to Kevin and Stacy. Thanks to Jill Godmillow for visiting our class this week. I look forward to seeing you Wednesday.